More about detectives for you. This year, Lawrence Block was named the 1994 Grand Master of the Mystery Writers of America. Block is a great reader, so we invited him to read an excerpt of his new novel, A Long Line of Dead Men. It's the 12th in his series featuring Detective Matt Scudder. Scudder is an unlicensed private detective, a former cop, and a recovering alcoholic. In the new novel, Scudder is hired by a member of a secret club to investigate why the members of the club are mysteriously dying. The club's only purpose is to meet once a year to record the passage of time. In this excerpt, we meet Scudder's old drinking buddy, Mick Ballou.
He is a large man, my friend Mick, tall and heavy, with a head that would not look out of place among the ancient sculptures on Easter Island. There is a primitive and monolithic quality to him. Years ago, a wit at Morrissey's After Hours described Stonehenge as looking like Mick and his brothers standing in a circle. It may be fitting, then, that he is just about the last of a vanishing breed, the tough Irish criminals who have been drinking and fighting and raising hell in the West 40s and 50s since before the Civil War. Various gangs and mobs held sway, the Gophers, the Rhodes Gang, the Parlor Mob, the Guerrillas. A lot of their leaders were saloon keepers, too, from Mallet Murphy and Paddy the Priest to Oney Madden. They were as cheerfully vicious as any group New York ever saw, and they might have made a more lasting mark on the place if they hadn't had such an all-consuming thirst. According to Mick, God created whiskey to keep the Irish from taking over the world. It had certainly kept the Hell's Kitchen hoodlums from taking over the city. A few years ago, some newspaper reporters started calling the current crop the Westies, and by the time the tag caught on, there was hardly anybody left to pin it to. The neighborhood bad guys were mostly gone, dead of drink or violence, doing life sentences somewhere upstate, rotting away in the back wards at Manhattan State Hospital. Or they were married and living somewhere in the Jersey suburbs, getting fat and sluggish, running crooked auto repair shops, rigging the games in church Las Vegas night fundraisers, or working all week for their fathers-in-law and drinking themselves sodden on the weekends. Mick, the son of a woman from County Mayo and a father born in France, not far from Marseille, was a man who drank whiskey like water, a career criminal, a brutal killer who would costume himself for a night of slaughter in the butcher's apron his father had worn, then wear the same apron to Mass at St. Bernard's. There was no reason why we should have become friends and no way to explain our friendship. Nor could I find an explanation for these long nights of ours, when the stories flowed like water or like whiskey. He would drink for both of us, filling his glass time and time again with the 12-year-old Jameson. I would keep him company with coffee, with Coca-Cola, with soda water. Maybe, as Jim Faber has suggested, it was a way for me to have the drink without the hangover, to recapture the sweetness of saloon society without risking a seizure or liver damage. Maybe, as Elaine proposed, the two of us had a long karmic history together, and were just renewing the ties that had bonded us in innumerable past lives. Or perhaps, as had sometimes occurred to me, Mick was at once the brother I never had and the road I'd left untaken. And maybe we're both just men who like a long night in a quiet room and a good story or two. A long line of dead men, he said. How's that? Ah, it's a story. Do you know Barney O'Day? He used to come to Morrissey's. I never met him there, I said, but I knew him when I was at the 6th. He managed a bar on West 13th Street. They had live music, and sometimes he'd get up and sing a song. Had he any sort of a voice? I don't think he was any worse than the paid entertainment. I used to run into him at the Lion's Head, too. What about him? Well, it's a story I heard another man tell at a wake, he said. It seems Barney's old mother was in the hospital, and he was at her bedside, and the dear told him that she was ready to die. I had a good life, says she, and wrung all the joy I could out of it, and I'm not after having machines keeping me alive and tubes sticking out of me. So give us a kiss, Barney, me lad, says she, as you were always as fine a son as a mother could ask for, and then tell the doctor to pull the plug and let me go. So your man gives her a kiss and goes off to find the doctor and tells him straight out what the old woman wants him to do. And the doctor's scarcely more than a boy himself. He hasn't been at it long, and Barney can see he's got no stomach for this sort of thing. He wants to be prolonging life, not cutting it short. He's troubled, and Barney's a gentle soul himself, for all the bluster he puts on, and wants to spare the man some agony. Doctor, says he, put your mind at ease. It's not such a terrible thing you have to be doing. Doctor, let me tell you something. We O'Days come from a long line of dead people. Outside, the wind blew up and drove rain against the windows. I looked out and saw cars passing, their lights reflected in the wet pavement. That's a wonderful story, I said. Ever since it was told to me, he said, I've carried the line around with me. For don't we all come from a long line of dead people? Your tale of the club put me in mind of it. 31 men, and one by one they go to their graves, and the last man left starts it all over again. A long line of dead men stretching back through the centuries. All the way to Babylon, rumor has it. All the way to Adam, he said. All the way to the first fish that grew hands and hauled himself ashore.
Lawrence Block, reading from his new novel, A Long Line of Dead Men. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.